2. Love between parent and child. The infant, at the moment of birth, would feel the fear of dying if a gracious fate did not preserve it from any awareness of the anxiety involved in the separation from mother and from intrauterine existence. Even after being born, the infant is hardly different from what it was before birth. It cannot recognize objects, it is not yet aware of itself, and of the world as being outside of itself. It only feels the positive stimulation of warmth and food, and it does not yet differentiate warmth and food from its source, mother. Mother is warmth. Mother is food. Mother is the euphoric state of satisfaction and security. This state is one of narcissism, to use Freud's term. The outside reality, persons and things, have meaning only in terms of their satisfying or frustrating the inner state of the body. Real is only what is within. What is outside is real only in terms of my needs, never in terms of its own qualities or needs. When the child grows and develops, he becomes capable of perceiving things as they are. The satisfaction in being fed becomes differentiated from the nipple, the breast from the mother. Eventually, the child experiences his thirst, the satisfying milk, the breast, and the mother as different entities. He learns to perceive many other things as being different, as having an existence of their own. At this point, he learns to give them names. At the same time, he learns to handle them, learns that fire is hot and painful, that mother's body is warm and pleasureful, that wood is hard and heavy, that paper is light and can be torn. He learns how to handle people, that mother will smile when I eat, that she will take me in her arms when I cry, that she will praise me when I have a bowel movement. All these experiences become crystallized and integrated in the experience, I am loved. I am loved because I am mother's child. I am loved because I am helpless. I am loved because I am beautiful, admirable. I am loved because mother needs me. To put it in a more general formula, I am loved for what I am, or perhaps more accurately, I am loved because I am. This experience of being loved by mother is a passive one. There is nothing I have to do in order to be loved. Mother's love is unconditional. All I have to do is to be her child. Mother's love is bliss, is peace. It need not be acquired. It need not be deserved. But there is a negative side, too, to the unconditional quality of mother's love. Not only does it not need to be deserved, it also cannot be acquired, produced, controlled. If it is there, it is like a blessing. If it is not there, it is as if all beauty had gone out of life, and there is nothing I can do to create it. For most children, before the age from 8.5 to 10, the problem is almost exclusively that of being loved for what one is. The child up to this age does not yet love. He responds gratefully, joyfully to being loved. At this point of the child's development, a new factor enters into the picture, that of a new feeling of producing love by one's own activity. For the first time, the child thinks of giving something to mother or to father, of producing something, a poem, a drawing, or whatever it may be. For the first time in the child's life, the idea of love is transformed from being loved into loving, into creating love. It takes many years from this first beginning to the maturing of love. Eventually, the child, who may now be an adolescent, has overcome his egocentricity. The other person is not anymore primarily a means to the satisfaction of his own needs. The needs of the other person are as important as his own. In fact, they have become more important. To give has become more satisfactory, more joyous than to receive. To love, more important even than being loved. By loving, he has left the prison cell of aloneness and isolation which was constituted by the state of narcissism and self-centeredness. He feels a sense of new union, of sharing, of oneness. More than that, he feels the potency of producing love by loving, rather than the dependence of receiving by being loved, and for that reason having to be small, helpless, sick, or good. Infantile love follows the principle, I love because I am loved. Mature love follows the principle, I am loved because I love. Immature love says, I love you because I need you. Mature love says, I need you because I love you. Closely related to the development of the capacity of love is the development of the object of love. The first months and years of the child are those where his closest attachment is to the mother. This attachment begins before the moment of birth, when the mother and child are still one, although they are two. Birth changes the situation in some respects, but not as much as it would appear. The child, while now living outside of the womb, is still completely dependent on mother. but daily he becomes more independent. He learns to walk, to talk, to explore the world on his own. The relationship to mother loses some of its vital significance, and instead the relationship to father becomes more and more important. In order to understand this shift from mother to father, we must consider the essential differences in quality between motherly and fatherly love. We have already spoken about motherly love. Motherly love, by its very nature, is unconditional. Mother loves the newborn infant because it is her child, not because the child has fulfilled any specific condition or lived up to any specific expectation. Of course, when I speak here of mother's and father's love, I speak of the ideal types, in Max Webster's sense, or of an archetype in Jung's sense, and do not imply that every mother and father loves in that way. I refer to the motherly and fatherly principle, which is represented in the motherly and fatherly person. Unconditional love corresponds to one of the deepest longings, not only of the child, but of every human being. On the other hand, to be loved because of one's merit, because one deserves it, always leaves doubt. Maybe I did not please the person whom I want to love me. Maybe this or that. There is always a fear that love could disappear. Furthermore, deserved love easily leaves a bitter feeling that one is not loved for oneself, that one is loved only because one pleases, that one is, in the last analysis, not loved at all, but used. No wonder that we all cling to the longing for motherly love, as children and also as adults. Most children are lucky enough to receive motherly love. To what extent will be discussed later. As adults, the same longing is much more difficult to fulfill. In the most satisfactory development, it remains a component of normal erotic love. Often it finds expression in religious forms, more often in neurotic forms. The relationship to father is quite different. Mother is the home we come from. She is nature, soil, the ocean. Father does not represent any such natural home. He has little connection with the child in the first years of its life, and his importance for the child in this early period cannot be compared with that of mother. But while father does not represent the natural world, he represents the other pole of human existence, the world of thought, of man-made things, of law and order, of discipline, of travel and adventure. Father is the one who teaches the child, who shows him the road into the world. Closely related to this function is one which is connected with socioeconomic development. When private property came into existence and when private property could be inherited by one of the sons, father began to look for that son to whom he could leave his property. Naturally, that was the one whom father thought best fitted to become his successor, the son who was most like him, and consequently whom he liked the most. Fatherly love is conditional love. Its principle is, I love you because you fulfill my expectations, because you do your duty, because you are like me. In conditional fatherly love, we find, as with unconditional motherly love, a negative and a positive aspect. The negative aspect is the very fact that fatherly love has to be deserved, that it can be lost if one does not do what is expected. In the nature of fatherly love lies the fact that obedience becomes the main virtue, that disobedience is the main sin, and its punishment, the withdrawal of fatherly love. The positive side is equally important. Since his love is conditioned, I can do something to acquire it. I can work for it. His love is not outside of my control, as motherly love is. The mother's and the father's attitudes toward the child correspond to the child's own needs. The infant needs mother's unconditional love and care, physiologically as well as physically. The child, after 6, begins to need father's love, his authority and guidance. Mother has the function of making him secure in life. Father has the function of teaching him, guiding him to cope with those problems with which the particular society the child has been born into confronts him. In the ideal case, mother's love does not try to prevent the child from growing up, does not try to put a premium on helplessness. Mother should have faith in life, hence not be over-anxious, and thus not infect the child with her anxiety. Part of her life should be the wish that the child become independent and eventually separate from her. Father's love should be guided by principles and expectations. It should be patient and tolerant, rather than threatening and authoritarian. It should give the growing child an increasing sense of competence and eventually permit him to become his own authority and to dispense with that of father. Eventually, the mature person has to come to the point where he is his own mother and his own father. He has, as it were, a motherly and a fatherly conscience. Motherly conscience says, there is no misdeed, no crime which could deprive you of my love, of my wish for your life and happiness. Fatherly conscience says, you did wrong, you cannot avoid accepting certain consequences of your wrongdoing, and most of all, you must change your ways if I am to like you. the mature person has become free from the outside mother and father figures and has built them up inside. In contrast to Freud's concept of the superego, however, he has built them inside not by incorporating mother and father, but by building a motherly conscience on his own capacity for love and a fatherly conscience on his reason and judgment. Furthermore, the mature person loves with both the motherly and fatherly conscience, in spite of the fact that they seem to contradict each other. If he would only retain his fatherly conscience, he would become harsh and inhuman. If he would only retain his motherly conscience, he would be apt to lose judgment and to hinder himself and others in their development. In this development from mother-centered or father-centered attachment and their eventual synthesis lies the basis for mental health and the achievement of maturity. In the failure of this development lies the basic cause for neurosis. While it is beyond the scope of this book to develop this trend of thought more fully, some brief remarks may serve to clarify this statement. One cause for neurotic development can lie in the fact that a boy has a loving but overindulgent or domineering mother and a weak and uninterested father. In this case, he may remain fixed at an early mother attachment and develop into a person who is dependent on mother, feels helpless, has the strivings characteristic of the receptive person, that is, to receive, to be protected, to be taken care of, and who has a lack of fatherly qualities, discipline, independence, and ability to master life by himself. He may try to find mothers in everybody, sometimes in women and sometimes in men in a position of authority and power. If, on the other hand, the mother is cold, unresponsive, and domineering, he may either transfer the need for motherly protection to his father and subsequent father figures, in which case the end result is similar to the former case, or he will develop into a one-sidedly father-oriented person, completely given to the principles of law, order, and authority, and lacking in the ability to expect or to receive unconditional love. This development is further intensified if the father is authoritarian and at the same time strongly attached to the son. What is characteristic of all these neurotic developments is the fact that one principle, the fatherly or the motherly, fails to develop, or, and this is the case in the more severe neurotic development, that the roles of mother and father become confused both with regard to persons outside and with regard to these roles within the person. Further examination may show that certain types of neurosis, like obsessional neurosis, develop more on the basis of a one-sided father attachment, while others, like hysteria, alcoholism, inability to assert oneself and to cope with life realistically, and depressions, result from mother-centeredness.